Welcome to the B-Side, podcast number 6 of Tuasson Lanes Church on November 12th, 2013. Steve, you did a really good job of fading that out exactly the right place. I don't know how you worked that out.
Danke.
That was good. Bitte. How was that? Was that good?
Awesome.
Okay. I got to take these off. Okay, well, this is Rhoda. Rhoda Brooks, and I'm here with Pastor Steve Croker.
Hey.
And for those of you who are regular listeners to the podcast, you will be spared our very witty banter about whatever the exciting things were that we do in our lives in Tuasson, in T-Town, because we have a special guest today. So what I'm going to say, we're going to take a little break so we can focus on our special guest. We're going to have like some German witty banter today.
Oh, yeah.
But if you had questions from Sunday's sermon, or we had some questions actually sent in from the week before. Unfortunately, they just came after we did our podcast. So next week, we will definitely be looking at questions. So remember to send in anything from the sermon topics, and we'd be happy to touch base on them. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you're wondering who our special guests are today, we have Ralph and Ruth Shresky with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
And they are special guests because, well, I should tell you that they are international workers of the Alliance, and you've been in Germany for 26 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I can't believe that.
I know.
Well, yeah. I mean, the last two have been in Canada.
Yeah, that's true. I can't believe that either. But, yeah, so you've been in Germany for a long time. But you're not just international workers of the Alliance. You guys have really been part of the TAC family for a long time, TAC extended mm-hmm. family. And because before you did those 26 years, Ralph, what did you do at Tuasson Lanes Church?
Well, starting in June, I believe, of 1979, I became a youth pastor. And it was before this wonderful building that we're sitting in today was in existence.
Oh, it was when it was still the old building.
Still the old little building, yeah. I had an office in the front right corner, like off the sanctuary, and I think they were trying to help me get holier by having me further forward or something like that. But anyways, yeah, I started as a 24-year-old, 25, I don't know how old I was, 23, right out of Bible school, and served here 3 years. And a few kind people were trying to line me up with their wonderful daughters.
But I kept
getting these wonderful invitations for lunch, and it was kind of, well, I don't know if it was obvious for everybody, but it seemed kind of obvious to me. But I served here 2 years, and then the third year got married, and Ruth and I connected from, she was serving in Kelowna, and then we ministered here together for a year, and then off to Regent College for 2 years. We lived in Vancouver, and then in 84, we moved to Grand Forks, B.C.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And lived there for 3 years, pastored a little church that had just been started. And Andrew was born just a month before we moved to Grand Forks. And the first few days he slept in a drawer because we didn't have a bed for him or something like that. And then Stephen came along in the last year that we were there. So he was born in Grand Forks. And then in 87, the summer of 87, we went to Germany. So Andrew was three and Stephen was a year and a half.
I remember going to your wedding.
Yes.
My brother Paul was in youth when you were youth pastoring.
Yes. Yeah.
And my much older brother.
Yes.
Because I was not in youth.
You were just a small child.
Yeah. But we went, because I remember we went to Kelowna for your wedding, and that's when my mom thought it would be good to do family pictures. So we have like weird sibling picture with Paul sitting in a chair, and he's got his the 80s or 70s, 80s mustache going in the big afro, and then me and my little sundress, and it's it's one of my favorite sibling
well,
pictures.
We have some pictures, and I think you're in those.
Yeah,
pictures,
did you know that Paul was on the same flight as we were then?
Oh, really?
Like, on the way to our honeymoon, he was on the same flight.
Oh, it's special.
From Kelowna to Vancouver.
And then he actually got us somehow organized that we would go into the cockpit, and that was back in the day when you could do that. And then told the pilot that we had just gotten married that day, and then when we came out, he, everyone clapped for us.
Hilarious.
Because he was telling him all the details, which we didn't know.
Out there. Yeah.
And then when we got to the to the airport, there was something about, like, the shuttle wasn't working for our hotel or something, so Paul drove us to our hotel. So he has a very special part in our
there you go. Probably more special than you were intending.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we Brookses, we work on that the best we can.
Get in there.
Okay, so, well, let's talk a little bit about, so then you've been in Germany since 87.
Yeah.
Okay, so Germany since 87. So when you first went to Germany, what was your favorite food and what was your biggest food challenge? You don't need to mention people's houses. You could just talk about the food. Yeah.
Huh. I think one of my early recollections of food and being there was, I would say two things. One was being in a home up in the north of Germany. We were helping with the church plant and having probably one of the first classic German breakfasts, like just a wonderful array of buns and croissants, cheese, cold cuts, coffee, juice. I actually wrote the guy recently because we've been having some people over, like my brother and his wife and a few others for German breakfast, quote unquote. And
you
so
wrote
recently I wrote Hartmut Klein, where we had this breakfast, and I said, you may not believe this or not, but I think it must have been 1990 or 1988, but I remember having this German breakfast at your home with your parents, and I said, whenever we have kind of a German breakfast, I think back to that breakfast because that was one of the first, you know, real.
Yeah, it's like huge. They have just tons of stuff on the table.
Yeah. And then
great.
The second memory would be a thing called rouladen. It's beef.
I've had that,
yeah.
Rolled with, it's almost like a stuffing with various kinds of ingredients. And so those are my two earliest memories. Good. That would be my
challenge. Our probably challenge is something haven't eaten, at least I've never eaten, salmagen.
All right.
It's like pig stomach, and they stuff it with, I don't know what, various meat byproducts.
That's like haggis.
And it's, it's kind of like that. Yeah, and it's like from our
area. It's like
area,
how they got through the Dark Ages.
Actually from our,
and Helmut Kohl, who used to be the
chancellor
of Germany for many years.
Yeah,
that was his favorite dish because
it's
a regional specialty.
Well, he just made it his favorite dish.
That's right.
That's right. Just to be popular.
Yeah.
Oh, Steve, what's the question you want to have for them?
Who's the best German car maker?
Well, you know, organization called, it's like the BCAA, like the BC Automobile Association, whatever. They have a German equivalent called ADAC. We call it ADAC. And they put out this list every year, which car maker had the least amount of problems. Like if you take your car in, you know,
repairs
once a year or every 2 years for a safety check or whatever. And they chart or on a graph.
Of course.
Which car maker had the best record.
They just use a sticky note, those Germans.
Yeah, that's right.
Sticky note.
And usually, it's kind of embarrassing for them because usually it's Toyota because, I mean, it's not made in Germany, but they're always kind of embarrassed because Toyota always ranks right up there as having the least problems. But the next one down as far as the German car maker is Mercedes.
Mercedes.
Yeah. So they're still the standard, like the hurdle, the point of, you know, reference for everything.
I remember going to Germany after Cape and Ray. I had some friends from there, and what blew me away were like all the Mercedes garbage trucks and Mercedes taxis.
Yeah.
And I was like,
all the buses.
This is like the weird land of Mercedes buses.
Yeah.
And I'm,
and the Mercedes buses, by the way, are made in Mannheim.
They're made in Mannheim.
Really?
Yes.
Well, the Mercedes is kind of like Mannheim's claim to fame because Carl Benz lived in Mannheim and invented the car there, which he named Mercedes after his friend's daughter. Yeah. And his wife actually was the first one to drive it.
Huh.
Because it was, in the garage, and he was, like, scared to test drive it or something.
She takes it out, yeah.
Bertha was her name.
Bertha.
They did not name it.
They didn't want to name it Bertha?
The Bertha Benz.
It's the Bertha
Benz.
That's right. Highway or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
right. Like
that.
Yeah.
They named a road after her. And
She got a car and a road.
Yeah.
fastest speed driven.
Yeah. Fastest speed?
Yeah.
A friend of ours came over to do a conference, a Freedom in Christ conference, and Cell Church, that's what it was, Cell Church conference. And his wife wanted to rent him a Porsche, or Porsche, as they say in German, for a day, but it was just extremely inhibitive, the price. So
because they know what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
You can rent it for $5, but your insurance.
Yeah, that's right. But so they settled for a BMW.
Settled.
And it was such a good price that they got it for 3 days. And so they'd come a couple of days early just to for jet lag and so on. So they went off for a one night, overnight somewhere into the Black Forest somewhere. And then they came back and they were staying with us. And his name is Randall, and they were going to take us out for dinner. And Randall says it's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He says, Ralph, do you want to take the BMW out for a drive? I said, I was hoping you would ask.
Didn't you take the boys with you?
Yeah, so the boys were, you know, teenagers or whatever, and I said, you guys want to come? Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. So we lived
right home when this conversation happened.
Yeah. I was home praying.
That's right. So we don't live too far from the Autobahn, and we got out there. But that time of day, rush hour, you know, people are... It's going
only
home.
Going 200.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's kind of slow.
So it was kind of busy, but it did get it up to 240.
Oh my goodness.
And the amazing thing was, number one, how quickly I could get up to that speed. And number two, that I still had a lot of gas pedal room left after that. I thought,
so
this
if the
is
road had been clear.
But it just floats along. It's just so amazing. And you know who is quite the speed demon? You might be listening to this at some point. Jessica Weber. She used to get, because she worked for Lidl, a big chain, food store chain, and she had this business car, like a company car, and it was a BMW. And we went to a retreat once, CMA kind of a retreat, and she was driving. And Ruth and I were sitting in the back
Audi,
seat.
Was it an Audi?
I thought
it was an Audi.
Oh,
but
maybe it
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Fast,
it was fast. And
180 kind of
she's
average.
Doing 180, 200 the whole way there.
We
just
got
as
there
if
a lot faster than usual.
We would plan 3 hours and we were there in two. You know? It's just amazing. And may I just throw in another little fast car story?
Yeah.
Our dearly beloved Holden Bauker phoned us one time.
Yeah.
This is years ago, from Basel, Switzerland. And they were planning on coming up to stay with us. And he said, we're in Basel. We're just going to be leaving, heading your way. How long does it usually take for you to get from Basel up to Mannheim? And I said, oh, we usually give about 2.5 hours because we drive a modest speed of 140 or something like that. And so I said, oh, that's great. Now we know. And I told Ruth so we could, you know, plan for dinner or whatever. Well, an hour and a half later, they knocked on our door.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought, this is not possible. Are you sure you were phoning from Basel, Switzerland? Oh, yeah. Well, they got an upgrade on their car from whatever to up to a Mercedes, and so they had driven over 200 the whole way there. So.
Oh, my goodness. It must have been driving you guys nuts the last 2 years being here and trying to drive all over the Lower Mainland.
Yeah, felt
getting
like
nowhere fast.
Always in the construction zone.
Because 100 is like construction zone speed there, so... Yeah.
Here, it's like when they do the new thing between Ladder and Towson, it's like construction zone is 50. Everybody go down. It's like you're on the highway and everybody's got to go down to 50 or 60. That felt almost actually more dangerous to me than
than going fast.
Favorite place to visit, Germany, like nice little spot or like vacation when you go away for a couple of days, where do you go?
Into the Black Forest, maybe. We found a few different
sounds like a fairy tale there. And then they went
into the Black Forest.
Never came back.
But honestly, what happens
in the Black Forest
stays in the Black Forest. What's really cool is that Heidelberg is one of our favorite places. And because just down the road, we've always taken all our friends there. And sometimes we'd go there on our day off because there's lots of great cafes. And so now I'm kind of like, we're going to live there? I can hardly believe that. It seems amazing.
Yeah.
How about a little, before we talk about Heidelberg and what your next plans are, why don't we talk a little bit about, because you guys were there for at least 24 years, and we know from those of us who've known you for a long time, know that they haven't been always the easiest. You've been very faithful in your work there. But now we have Haus der Herrn, so maybe you can give a brief update on maybe Haus der Herrn and also Maybe the, what would be interesting is, what is the difference between the spiritual climate in Germany when you first went there? Mm-hmm. And do you feel that there's a difference between that and now? Mm-hmm. Did I just put three questions at the same time? So let's talk about spiritual climate first. Let's talk about that one first.
Yeah.
Well, I would say it's, to use a good German word, a very stark, we would say in German, stark contrast between when we first got there and now. And one of the first people that really impacted us in terms of having a vision for Germany and, you know, asking God to bring change, to bring revival, to bring renewal, was a guy named Wolfram Kopfmann. And he would be like a A.W. Tozer kind of a guy for Germany, just an amazing, brilliant communicator, writer, and he was actually the head of the evangelical or the Lutheran Church renewal movement for many, many years. But he kind of jumped ship because he said this ship is not going to turn very easily, and so as much as he didn't want to, he left that. But he was really believing God for renewal at that time, back in the late 80s when we got there. But he said what Germany really needs is the planting of literally thousands and thousands of new churches. He says that's the big hope. Well, back in those days, it was like...
He was like voice crying in the wilderness.
He really, because nobody, like, hardly anybody was really doing that. There were just a few little places of, you know, hot spots around the country. Mm-hmm. But I would say in the last 5 years, the climate of seeking God, of renewal, of conferences, of revival, it's just like a whole new chapter.
And church planting.
And church planting. Mm-hmm. It's just a whole new atmosphere. And even the acceptance of people from North America. Canadians are so welcome because we're such an international kind of a country, and most of our roots as the U.S. are from Europe and many from Germany. And but if you come with an attitude to serve and to come alongside and encourage and equip and so on, we've just felt that as well has been a change. Like we had to learn and kind of develop a bit of not a reputation, but
in a good way.
But the level of acceptance of our being there has also grown, and you know, that's taken time. Well, but just generally, Germans accepting others coming to help plant churches, just as encouragement and in a positive way, not a condescending, we'll come and help you, poor, whatever. That doesn't go
that
over
doesn't
well in any
well
country.
Yeah.
No.
Strange.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think just also the whole profile of what we call the free church, so not Catholic or Lutheran.
But not state.
Baptist, Pentecostal, you know, the Alliance would fall under that. Evangelical free church. I think just the profile of that has risen, and because churches are growing and they're starting to do more in their communities, so there's more acceptance. Because, I mean, there is still this sort of, well, what kind of cult are you? Because we don't know where to fit you in.
You don't fit in our state church.
Yeah. So what? You must be a cult. So that kind of suspicion is somewhat less now.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a generational thing with a new, like? Because I know a lot of your work lately has been with university students.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. It is definitely.
Yeah, because some of them, they come and then their parents are still kind of wondering what kind of group they're with.
One young lady, Heike by name, came as a student from another city in Germany to study in Mannheim. I can't remember the whole story how we got in touch with her, but she came to Christ, got discipled, wanted to get baptized, but her parents were just totally against this, and she wanted them to be there. And wisely, she said, okay, I'm still going to get baptized, but I'll wait a couple of months or whatever until the next service. But I'll do that if you're willing to come to my baptismal or to a baptismal service and see what it's all about.
See what it's like, yeah.
So she was very wise in that and so put it off in terms of time. But I remember her parents being there, and at that time, I was kind of the pastor or one of the leaders in that sense. That's how they would peg me, at least. Well, they kept their distance from me. Like, there's just no way they were going to shake my hand.
I was a very straight guy, leader.
Yeah. Cult leader.
Oh, yeah. And so they held to their part of the deal, and she to hers. And then a few months later, whatever the timing was, then she got baptized, and they were there. And I did get a handshake, I believe, if I recall correctly. But in the meantime, her brother had gone on our website and check things out, and she related these things back to us. They actually believe the Bible. Like, they take Bible seriously. Like they have their own Bibles. They read it every day. And
they have their own Bibles. I mean, what century are we in?
I know. It was just so unusual. Yeah. So that came from her brother, but kind of because her parents were so skeptical and careful. And I don't know where her parents are at in these days, but Heike ended up coming and living in White Rock for 6 months. We arranged this because she needed to do for her university studies a study abroad program for 6 months, and ended up staying with a good friend of mine working for his company in their HR department, and attended Peace Portal Alliance Church. It was kind of a funny arrangement. And then she went back, graduated, and felt called to ministry and using her HR skills. And so for the last 3-4 years, she's been living in Vienna working for Trans World Radio as an HR specialist. So it's one of those wonderful stories, total pagan in the sense of maybe the form of godliness, but came to Christ, and there she is, one of the wonderful shining examples of someone coming to Christ and in the midst of parents and family that couldn't figure this out.
Which a lot of us, I think, there are people who can appreciate, but a lot of people listening or going to church who don't have that same concept of what it would be like not to have that support.
Right.
Yeah. So, update on House De Haarn. Maybe you can explain what we're saying when we say House De Haarn. And update on them, how they're doing, and how we can maybe be praying for them.
Well, house is house. Des Haarn means of the Lord. So, House of the Lord. And that's the church that we planted in Mannheim. And it's actually 5 years this month since we've been in leadership there. And the German team took over. So, Ralph just wrote them a little email and just encouragement and thanking them for, you know, they're all working full time as well. And so they give a lot of their time. And
so, all the leadership at House De Haarn is lay leadership?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Andale and Jesse are taking some Bible school, seminary-type training. Like, first they were doing correspondence out of the States, Bible school by correspondence, whatever it was called, and we were mentoring that whole process. And then they found out, and I had actually wanting to study there myself, but in a town in the Black Forest, about an hour away, there is an evangelical seminary that's associated with Columbia Bible or Columbia University in South Carolina. And they have a seminary there. And Andale and Jesse both have their, what we would call a bachelor's degree, in, I think, in business or education.
Well, he's a teacher.
But they found out that they could build on that and at this seminary or Bible school work towards their master's degrees. So they're now both taking modular courses. And so they're the only ones that in that sense have had more classic Bible school training. But anyways, everyone else, they're all working.
And so the way they can do that is that there is a team of them. There have been usually 6 or 7 different people take turns preaching. They can divide up sort of the responsibilities. So that's the way it works while still working. But it's still a lot. I think they're doing really well from what we hear. The church has been growing. Right now they're in the midst of looking for a place to meet because they had to leave the place they were in. And so they've been kind of shuffling around from one place to another, trying out. The last week they were in a disco, and that had mixed reviews, I guess. Anyway, so they're looking for a place. But they're also doing some, they're having some changes in their leadership team because our son Stephen and our daughter-in-law Uli were on the team, and they've now been sent out from the church because they're starting something with two other couples. They're starting a worship academy. They're calling it Epicenter, Equipping People in Christ. And it's their vision is to have a place where people can come, learn about worship and prayer, be in an atmosphere of worship and prayer, you know, if they're seeking God or whatever, and they'll be doing seminars and they'll be doing worship nights. And so they had their first worship night at the beginning of October and felt really blessed by that. When we talked to Uli and Stephen, after, Uli said it was everything that I imagined it would be, or everything I was, you know, hoping, praying for. So that's really cool.
That's right.
So anyway, there's sort of Halstead's Hand is launching them. And then there's another group. It's a small group, but it's about 20 people now, and they meet in a city about 30 kilometers outside Mannheim. And they are getting ready to launch as their own church or faith community or whatever. They're kind of scared of calling it a church because then they think they have to be pastors. So we're trying to say, it's okay. Don't have to have all the, you know, all the trappings, but they really have a heart for not only their city, but a bunch of cities along this one
highway
stretch
three,
highway.
Which goes and through Heidelberg.
Yes, yeah. So they're, yeah, they're just really excited about that too. So in that way, we're really encouraged that Halstead's Hand is it's doing well and well enough to launch two new things.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
That is exciting.
And we're hoping that, and I wrote Andale and Jesse, and Andale, if you're listening, please, please, please let us do this. they do want to commission us and kind of send us off and bless us to start in Heidelberg. But I wrote in this email to Andale yesterday, congratulating them for the 5 years of leadership and so on. And I said, we would love to be commissioned by you guys and sent off. And I would like to be able to invite our whole neighborhood, like where we've lived these 20-some years. They themselves, our German neighbors, say, this is not a typical German neighborhood. Like the degree of connecting and back and forth visiting and most of them are older than we are, like retired people. There's a couple of young families in there, or maybe three. But they said, yeah, this is unusual. You won't find this very often, the degree of neighborliness and connectedness.
Community.
Yeah, it is really.
And they have been so supportive. I won't go into all the details, but there were times along the way where our landlord wanted to kick us out for, well, I won't go into all the details, but.
For your rowdy parties?
That's
yeah,
it.
My goodness, I can imagine.
And one day soon after that notice that we had from the landlord, two of the neighbor men came over. It was a little bit like when you get a knock on the door from the police or some religious sect or whatever, and they're standing at the door, and they're saying, Mr. and Mrs. Shresky, we've heard that your landlord is not too happy about this or that, and we were able to clarify these things. It was a bit of a misunderstanding, but anyways, these two gentlemen, neighbors from down the street, said, we want you to know that if push comes to shove, we know a good lawyer, and we will make sure that you do not get kicked out of this apartment. So they were just like right there on our doorstep saying, we are glad you're here in our neighborhood, and we'll make sure that doesn't change. And so all these years, and then when I had to do my first round of chemo,
they're really
so supportive, and when I was not well in the last few months and so on, helped clean up her yard and all kinds of stuff. And so just an amazing thing. So I'd like to invite all of those people to whatever would be like a prayer of commissioning and blessing, and then have a lunch afterwards for them, and just to say thank you for being amazing neighbors.
It'd be so cool if they connected into the house to her.
Well, that's what we thought.
Yes,
like
that would be a nice.
It would be a way
spin-off,
to at least introduce them to what it's like there. I think they can't imagine it.
Can't fathom it.
Yeah.
And we were invited to a neighborhood barbecue. Like this one couple hosted it, and we were could be the kids. I mean, we're a bit older, but we could be the kids of any one of those couples. They're all, you know, in their 70s. One is maybe 80. And we had this wonderful, amazing meal in the backyard of this one home 2 doors down from us. And during the course of the conversation, one asked, so how's your church going? And we were just saying, it's going really well. And we've stepped out of leadership, but this wonderful German couple is taking the lead now, and great team of leaders. And, oh, you've got Germans in your church? We thought they were all Canadians. I said, what? We're the only Canadians in this church. Well, I said, well, there's one other Canadian young guy who married a German. I said, no, this is, except for a few, you know, international students, they're all German.
Well, and they couldn't believe they're at that time it was about 120 on a Sunday morning. Yeah. Like, seriously, if we have 25 old ladies, we're doing well.
Like so, in their church, you know, down
in their
the street.
Church. So wow. I think they can't, and they couldn't imagine kind of what the service would be like, yeah. I think. Hmm. So anyway, it would be great.
So well, I'm hoping they won't be meeting in a disco if
on that Sunday. On that Sunday. Just rock the if you're gonna rock yeah. the world, you might as well might rock as well. It all the way.
Dear
yeah. Oh, well, speaking of then this commissioning.
Yeah.
So why don't we chat about what they'd be commissioning you for? Chat about the next mm-hmm. steps.
Oh,
yeah, and we also, I guess, in part, we tie in part of that, people who know you haven't been well, and why you've been here for 2 years. So maybe. You can just talk about that transition because the fact that you will be going back. Because a lot of people don't know you have approval for that.
Right.
Yes.
So.
Breaking news.
Found out yesterday.
Yesterday. News flash.
A day to remember.
Yeah. God planned it so you'd be on the podcast today. Yeah. You'd get that news yesterday.
Sure.
Yeah. So we could share it. So why don't you share your news?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, my last visit with the hematologist, Dr. Hoag, at the Vancouver General Hospital, she gave her blessing or her approval. She says, yeah, you're good to go in terms of the journey with leukemia and the transplant, and your blood values are great, and being weaned off these two immune suppressants. And so she says, you're good to go. Like, she was glad to be able to. Get rid of me, but she was happy that I was well enough that from her perspective, I still need to be tracked and followed.
Hmm.
And the hematologist in Heidelberg, Dr. Dreger, as we would say, Dreger, I had only one visit with him just before we came back to Canada 2 years ago. And had we stayed in Germany, he would have done the stem cell transplant himself. Like he would have overseen that process. So I wrote him about a month ago and I said, it looks very likely that we'll be coming back within the next few months. Would you be willing to take the baton and kind of track with me and my journey? And he said, for sure. And just here's my phone number. Give me a call when you get back. So we mentioned this to Dr. Hoag, my doctor here. And she says, Dr. Dreger, he's the world-renowned specialist in this type of leukemia.
Wow.
Like, this is amazing. She was,
whoa.
I don't
you'll
know if she's met him,
hands.
But yeah, you'll be in great
Can
hands.
I have his autograph?
That's
yeah.
right.
It's like you're phoning him and Sign you don't even file. Know that he's a megastar. He's like,
yeah,
sure,
I didn't
we'll
know
get
that.
Together. And you have like no idea.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You take me on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that really, I think, gave her a greater assurance of, you know, being handed off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really a great encouragement. So then she sent a report to a man by the name of Dr. Gamble in Toronto, and he's a consultant in an organization called International Health Management, and he's hired by the CMA, by the Alliance, for all of our international workers. So when they are in country or back in Canada, all of our files, anything that we're doing medically, things that were, you know, blood tests, anything, they all go to him. And so he kind of keeps a big picture of all of us as staff. And instead of our missions director getting any of these things, and they don't know what to do with that. It's funneled through him, and then he reports to the mission. So he was the last, not hurdle, but he had to make the final statement, yes, Ralph is good to go. And so Dr. Hoag sent him this report, and he in turn sent our missions directors a report with a little bit of a proviso saying, well, Ralph is doing so much better, but he's still not 100% capacity. So I would agree for him to go back, but he'll have to pace himself. And then some of the bone density loss problems I've had with some of this medication have caused me some pain in my back. And that's a whole story in itself. But I'm getting some help with that, and I'm doing a lot better. And so they're... They're glad to have us back.
Yeah, they just made him swear that he will not lift any suitcases. So,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Gerald, our regional leader from Europe, he said, we were Skyping with him yesterday, he said, so you've got a few Seamless Link churches, and you were thinking of Tuas and Alliance. They should be there at the airport carrying your bags and, you know, doing all this stuff so you don't have to do that.
Anyways. I think it's a note to us, all you people listening out there. Well, we need some information. When do you need to be at the airport?
That's right. So anyways, we're just blessing the Lord for this breakthrough, and it's almost like surreal. Oh, we can now go, as
like
we've been talking about.
Like we've been waiting so long, and it's now like...
Yeah.
What so was it probably like? Normally, if you had come home, you would have been home for a year?
6 months.
Six months.
Yeah.
So just,
so it's been 2 years,
That's right.
So we figure we'll go mid-December. Yeah. That's kind of what we're thinking, which is like a month from now.
Wow. Yeah. All right, so, well, I want to make sure, for sure, that before we run out of time, that we talk about what's next. Because, okay, so you got the clear, you're going to Heidelberg, you're going to be sent out by House to Hearn, and you are being sent out to do what? What looks different about Heidelberg, or is it the same, or what? Give us a picture that we can put in our minds of Heidelberg.
Well, someone asked me a couple days ago, so you're moving to Heidelberg, and then what? And I said, that's a really good question. And I feel like what's different for us, anyway, is that I don't feel like we're going with a strategy so much as the first thing is prayer. The first thing is kind of getting settled there, getting to know people, becoming part of the community, and spending a lot of time in prayer and listening to God. So I think it, which is less comfortable than having a nice little plan figured out, first we're going to do this and then that. So I think, not that we didn't pray when we first went, but I think this time we have more of a sense that praying and waiting on God is going to be the first step, and whatever else he leads us to will come out of that. Mm-hmm. So it is more nebulous than we're kind of used to, and it's not that comfortable, but that's where we feel like we are supposed to be this time.
So can we, as a church community, then be praying along with you? Mm-hmm. So you're moving, so praying for the connections and praying that God will just reveal to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What his design would be.
Yeah, even like where to live. We've been mm-hmm. looking online, and we've recently thought of getting a bigger place with Jonathan, who you met mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago, Jonathan Watland, who's going to be part of our team. We were just Skyping with him today, and he said he thought he could imagine living in the same place as we are. So as long as we each kind of have our space.
And
we're just looking a little differently now. When we look online, we're looking for a bigger place and where we'd also have room for interns or people that came mm-hmm. short term.
Hmm.
So no idea what that will look like. But we have found a couple of things that were also not as extravagantly expensive as we thought. So, that's like the first initial prayer request is where we get situated.
Right place,
because that'll make a big difference even in terms of the community we're in and mm-hmm. where we're located.
Yeah, who are supposed to be your neighbors.
Right.
And what should your home look like for whatever the plans
are.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And the cool thing is, you know, we've had a vision and prayer night here. We've been part of, I think, one or two encounter evenings. We're going to do mm-hmm. be part of
one
that on the 1st of December. And we've had several in the Greater Vancouver area, and Ruth did two or three out in Ontario this summer. And we did actually have one in Calgary as well. But it's been so encouraging, the degree of faith, like we sometimes mm-hmm. would pass around a clipboard. And so when people are praying in their small groups, if you have a particular way that someone prayed in your group, or a scripture verse, or an impression from the Lord about, you know, what they might anticipate, or, kind of a faith picture of what God might have in mind, please write that down. So we've got pages and pages of verses and sense of promise and so on. And it was quite uncanny. I mean, typical God. We'd say in German, typisch Gott.
I gotta learn how to say that.
That's right. But, one church out in Cloverdale, Pacific Community, and then Richmond Alliance Church, there were, I think, 3 weeks in between, but very similar impressions that two different, totally different people had. But similar impression was this picture of low-hanging fruit that when we get there, without a lot of effort, because God has been preparing the way and he's heard our prayers and we're joining in, and so we're believing, we're already doing church planting from over here by praying, and God, you know, stir people's hearts and lead us to people that are ready. And we'll just kind of pluck, here they are. And in these two different locations, similar kinds of images, and one had even a little more specific, that some of the first fruit that God would give us would be our neighbors, like right next door. So we're saying, oh, we'll take that. We'll pray into that.
Well, those are good things to pray for.
Yeah. So yeah, we're just asking God to, I mean, it's all his work. It's all his doings anyways, but I think he's just revealing some of his own heart for, says, yeah, you guys think you have a vision for Heidelberg. I've got a really big heart for this city. So that gives us great encouragement. And yeah, so that's one way people can just join in and believe in God that he's got people already prepared to connect with him. Early fruit.
Other ways we can be praying for you guys, and as you're preparing to go and in the next couple of months?
Well, I think just one way we were started to pray the other night was just that all the details would go smoothly. You know, there's so many things that can kind of bog you down, and just
moving's just always so fun. Yeah. Moving internationally is that much more fun.
And so just finding a place fairly quickly, and you know, all the stuff, even like setting up new phones and internet, and sometimes that can take months in such an advanced country. I don't understand that. But just all those kind of things, and that we'd have enough people to help us. I mean, we're going back kind of just before Christmas, so we're sort of figuring till the end of December we're kind of on our own, and we'll just be packing and sorting and that kind of stuff, but that will have people to help. And yeah, just for smooth transition. There's always sort of the tearing, you know, like the excited to go and sad to say goodbye emotional part of the transition too. So
and another thing would be probably tomorrow or maybe late this evening, I'm not sure which, we need to phone our landlord from our apartment in Mannheim, because the last state of affairs with him in terms of rental contract was to the end of this year. But because of some of the delay and just some of my own health journey, I had to put it off. So we need to phone him and say, Herr Weber, by the way, we're coming back in December, but we won't be able to move by the end of the month. Could you give us another month, you know, to extend our rent?
And we're also praying that he will be planning on renovating, because otherwise we would have to repaint the whole house inside.
Yeah, that's what you have to do.
And that would be like a huge job. So that would be really nice if we didn't have to do that.
So if we do have to do that, we might be calling Steve. And are there any handy people who have a few weeks to
want to paint?
When you're looking for volunteers to paint in Germany,
all
of a sudden all sorts of people pop up. You're looking for volunteers to paint kids' classrooms. They're hard to find.
Somehow they're too busy.
No, it's just scheduling.
It must be scheduling.
Yeah. We should be careful, because Shirley likes to paint. She might be over there. Okay, so those are good things to pray for.
Yeah, so you guys are thinking mid-December, which means you're tied up on Sundays next few weeks. So we probably won't see you again in the morning at TAC. However,
well, I was just saying to Ruth on the way here, she may do a quick little trip to see our kids in Calgary. I won't take that stress upon you. I mean, it's not that big of a stress, but
you're referring to the airplane, not the kids.
That's right. Yeah.
Just clarifying.
Because our oldest grandson turns 4 on the 10th of December, so she's going to do it as a surprise to be there.
And don't tell them about this podcast.
Yeah,
don't.
No.
So then, instead of maybe leaving on the 12th or something like that, as we had originally thought, we thought that'd be a little
knap.
As we say in German, that would be a little
tight.
That's
a good word.
Maybe we should leave the week after, like maybe, what's the Sunday, the 15th?
Yeah.
And then maybe we'd leave the 16th or 17th. So we might, then we would come on Sunday.
Yeah. But the time when we have church has next opportunity, December 1st, Sunday night, we have an encounter, worship and prayer night, and you guys will be there, share some prayer requests, we'll have opportunity to hear from you and be praying with you on some of these things you've shared. So that's sort of the next time that we'll be together to focus and pray for the work in Germany. So we'll look forward to that.
Okay.
December 1.
Yeah.
Be sure to be there. There'll be details. We haven't told anyone it's coming, but it is. December 1, we're working on starting a planning.
All these secrets being shared on this. That's why people should listen
to the
podcast.
Breaking news. It's like the CNN. Boss Lines
Church.
Exactly. Yeah.
So December 1st, Sunday night, we'll be doing Encounter and looking forward to that.
So we hope you can, those of you listening, that you'll join us for plan for that. And send in your questions. So send your questions into the B-side, twasonalliance.org. And we'd love to hear from you. And we just want to thank Ralph and Ruth again for
coming
out.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks,
awesome.
Guys.
Glad to be here. Bless you guys.